Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm happy to have as my guest the author of three books, the newest of which is called Weather. This is the author, Jenny Offill. Now, the book is called Weather, and I remember that one of Donald Barthelme's rules for his students was no weather. Get rid of weather. Writing about weather, the most boring thing in the world. Now, why have you chosen weather?
I wanted to title it weather because, first of all, I just liked the sound of the word. And second of all, I liked that it would have a little echo of possibility with weather, whether to do something, whether not to, and a kind of hesitation that is going on in the book. But also the sense of in our lives that we have weathered something, that we have come through something, and that we're a bit worse for wear from it felt important to me. Also, I think there was a really interesting moment where talking about the weather went from feeling innocuous to feeling like there was a lot of subterranean feeling underneath it.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that weather has changed, and we are now living in a culture that is probably, no matter who you are, in some way afraid of the weather or worried about weather, and that your real subject, which seems to me to be dailiness, is interrupted or suspended by weather, that what you write is a kind of psychological marriage novel that may be interrupted by the weather of the couple or the weather, the threat of weather in the world, and that what we once looked upon as the everyday is no longer reliable, can't be relied upon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read this passage once. It was in a book called Solitude by British psychoanalyst Anthony Shore, maybe. And there's a section where he talks about how anxieties about the natural world used to be where everyone focused their energy, concern, and worry about that. And then as our environments became more man-made, we turned that into worries about the people around us and about relationships as they were. And I thought that was interesting, the idea of sort of that instead of talking about the actual weather, we're talking about the emotional weather. And then for me, I noticed at a certain point, I started talking about the actual weather again. When I was first thinking about writing the book, I was feeling very shy about just a book that had a different shape. And so I just gave myself a little task, which was to talk about the weather with everyone that I met.
The central character is Lizzie. You do very well writing about contemporary circumstances. And Lizzie is one of the many people who at one time was working on a PhD, who discovered that that wasn't her field, but if not, what was it? And her dissertation director pulled some strings and got her a job in the university library, where she's frequently helping people who have concerns about the future. They're older, they're teachers at the university, and they still don't know how to use the web. And they'll come up and ask Lizzie, what's my entrance code? And Lizzie has to say, I'm so sorry, you're the only one who knows your entrance code. And the old man looks at her with a look that says, well, what kind of help desk are you? And we're living in that disintegrated world where help really isn't available and a lot of people need it. And Lizzie,
she does want to be at the help desk, and she does want to sort of wander through all the things in her mind and somehow pull out something that would be helpful. One of the reasons I think she didn't end up finishing her dissertation is that she's actually just kind of purely a researcher, not a researcher toward any one thing, but just a researcher as a kind of wanderer. And so I think one of the reasons I wanted to set it in a library, one is just that I've spent so much of my life in libraries. And second of all, because it's just one of our last kind of commons places. And when you're in a library, if you're in a small library, you often will hear all sorts of stories being told to the person working there and all sorts of just moments of sorrow and joy being shared, really.
Once upon a time, you took a course in creative writing. And the person teaching that course was, say, Joy Williams or Gil Sorrentino. They didn't have MFAs. Writing, you were a feral writer. Mm-hmm. And she is the product of that kind of world where you know what you know because it was passionate.
Exactly. I mean, I realized when I was writing this novel that certain memories would come back to me, and they were from libraries. And Gil Sorrentino was one of my writing teachers and a really big influence on me. And I have a very distinct memory of being in the library in New Orleans and pulling down and reading for the first time The Moon in Its Flight, which remains one of my favorite short stories of all time. And I just remember being there, kneeling on the floor with the books above me, and just having that sense you get when you read something that amazes you of just expansiveness. And of also, the last line of that story was very frightening to me because it ends with, art cannot rescue anyone from anything. And I thought, oh no, I've staked my life on the opposite.
And your book, Weather, is filled with people who are living very much in these times. Mm-hmm. Lizzie's son is playing computer games, one of the very popular ones.
Mm-hmm. It's a strange moment when your child is playing a video game, and I don't know much about them. And so I come in and I would hear things like, it's almost night, or you've killed my chickens. And I would feel like I had walked into some play that was happening, that where an entirely different life was being lived. I don't feel like I am a particularly timely person, a person that moves exactly at the speed of things right now. I think that I like to move more slowly. And one of the things that I was trying to capture in this novel is what it feels like to have a kind of lightning quick sense of various vectors of dread.
I'm talking to Jenny Offal about her novel, Weather. It's, in a sense, the second novel in a row, the one before it, Department of Speculation, that are trying to figure out how to construct life out of its fragments. One of the people who comes up to Lizzie in the library explains that she's had to replace her cell phone, that it's so slow. And Lizzie realizes they have the same cell phone and that this is giving Lizzie the information she needs in seconds, but that is too slow for...
The girl is saying that I've resigned myself to missing out, and that I'm, of course, by not getting a new phone, I realize that all sorts of things will pass me by. And then Lizzie sort of realizes that, she says, wait, do you mean in seconds it will pass you by? And the girl says, yes. I'm not on social media. Or it's sometimes funny with the way that people will talk sometimes about my novels, because it'll often... People say, oh, it's about the sort of way people tweet and right now. And I think for me, I've always liked to write in a way that feels like it comes closer to approaching what I experience as thinking, as consciousness. And so I'm drawing from, you know, people like Jean Rhys or someone that does that doubling back. I was just thinking for some reason today that when I was a kid and we lived in California for a little while, and I remember very distinctly, just came back to me as I was wandering around today, that I used to love to go and make tracks on the beach, and then I would go back and try to make them more complicated, or sometimes I would like drag my leg, and my imagination was that someone would come along and they'd have no idea what beast had gone here because the tracks were so strange. Oh, the occupations of an only child.
This book, Weather, what's beautiful is she's in touch with her teacher. What was her teacher's
name?
Sylvia. Sylvia. Sylvia is a lecturer. She has a site where she gives her talks. The site is called Hell and High Water.
Right, it's a podcast, yes.
And she's trying to teach people that they can live in a present moment without necessary despair. Mm-hmm. That being able to do that is part of learning how to live. Mm-hmm. And on her podcast, she mentions the necessity of providing final moments of hope. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of this book, Weather, by my guest Jenny Offill, there's a page where we're referred to obligatorynoteofhope.com. And the very first note is there a list of hints. And the first note is about reading and rereading. Would you read it to us?
Yes. Read and reread. Everything. Everything significant that had earlier caught one's attention should be reread. The main impression you got from reading books in Leningrad during the siege was the enormity of the world, as opposed to the cramped, cold, dark room in which you sit by the guttering wick of an oil lamp. Polina Barskova, besieged Leningrad.
Now, all of these hints are drawn from books, and to my great pleasure, several of them are drawn from books by writers who've been on my show. One is by Joy Williams. One is by Linda Barry. One of your hints comes from Joy Williams, and it's from her book, 99 Notes on God. And I'm going to ask you to read it because
it's so
beautiful.
Tip 43, listen to parables. The Lord was in a den with a pack of wolves. You really are so intelligent, the Lord said, and have such glorious eyes. Why do you think you're hounded so? It's like they want to exterminate you. It's awful. Well, sometimes it's the calves and the cows, the wolves said. Oh, those maddening cows, the Lord said. I have a suggestion. What if I caused you not to have a taste for them anymore? It wouldn't matter. Then it would be the deer or the elk. Have you seen the bumper stickers on the hunter's trucks? Did a wolf get your elk? I guess I missed that, the Lord said. Sentiment is very much against us down here, the wolf said. I'm so awfully sorry, the Lord said. Thank you for inviting us to participate in your plan anyway, the wolf said politely. The Lord did not want to appear addled, but what was the plan his sons were referring to exactly? Joy Williams, 99 Stories About God.
That was Jenny Offill, and her book, Weather, ends with the suggestion that you visit a site called obligatorynoteofhope.com. You've figured out a way to write the spirituality of dailiness novel. But in this book, it's completed by the website. Now, I happened to receive a note from you suggesting to be sure to visit that website. And I think it's very much a part of the book. That is to say, I think that most realistic psychological fiction is without spirituality, and that you have induced the spiritual world into your work. Tell me about that.
Well, it's always been something that I've been drawn to. I was raised Christian, at first rather lackadaisically, and then rather aggressively at some point, and then it went back to being lackadaisical. But what I know is that as soon as I began to read on my own in religious studies, I was drawn as if like a magnet to the mystic traditions of every one of them. And I think a very early thing that I came across, which I still think of, you know, it's funny that you can be so many years later, you can realize that you still think of something like once a week that you found out at a certain time. And the thing that I think of is just something I learned in a freshman class about medieval monks. And it was the idea that the world is a book, which I think was very beautiful to me because I was such a bookish person. But it said that it's a book and that moments of transcendence are where we're allowed to read a few lines and then it goes dark again. And I remember thinking that when I was writing my first book about childhood, that childhood had felt that way very much to me, that I would sometimes see a few lines and then it would go dark. And then as I got older, I guess I just continued to want to read people like Thomas Merton or Meister Eckhart or anyone where in some way they were saying that dailiness contained the ecstatic. I feel like for me, bringing that dimension of what I think of as the sublime into what is maybe thought of as the everyday, it feels kind of like my primary interest. And also of bringing the ordinary into the sublime. It's about that movement between the two that seems interesting.
Jenny, I don't think you could have said that any better if you tried. I mean, it's beautiful. I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Jenny Offill about her new book, Weather. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Jenny Offill about her new book, Weather, in which a librarian discovers and confronts her limits while trying to save everyone as an armchair therapist. Now, I'd say we're all armchair therapists most of the time, especially if we read. And you just mentioned Thomas Merton. There's a particularly beautiful hint from Thomas Merton. Would you read that one?
Yes, I will. Tip number 3, observe the weather. Our perfunctory observations on what kind of day it is are perhaps not idle. Perhaps we have a deep and legitimate need to know in our entire being what the day is like, to see it and feel it, to know how the sky is gray, paler in the south, with patches of blue in the southwest, with snow on the ground and the thermometer at 18, and cold wind making your ears ache. I have a real need to know these things because I myself am part of the weather and part of the climate and part of the place, and a day in which I have not shared truly in all of this is no day at all. Thomas Merton, The Collected Journals.
That's so gorgeous, huh? You must have practically crowed when you found that.
It was funny. I found it really late. And it was one of those moments where I thought, oh, that's why I need to write about this. You know, sometimes you sort of fumble towards something intuitively. And then if you're lucky, you later find it written out in some recognizable way, the sort of thing that you were searching for. And that was one of those moments.
And I know that one of your favorite writers is Rilke, the great German poet. It seems like Rilke couldn't put a pen in his hand without arriving with something transcendent and beautiful and emotionally stirring. This book's your book, Weather, its first chapter ends with the information that there are moths that drink the tears of sleeping deer,
is Birds.
It? Birds. I mean, we are all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And this book has a strange intention to show us how, during our daily lives, interconnections occur constantly,
mm-hmm.
even though you're writing about the simple psychology of dailiness.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm just interested in that idea of like entanglement or enmeshment. And I think one of the things that I was probably, you know, recognized such an affinity for in Rilke was that, I mean, not only is he able to look at a headless statue and say at the bottom of it, you know, there are no eyes here that do not see you. You must change your life. I love the sort of authority and beauty of that. And I also love that he will write about someone who's far away, that maybe they both heard the same bird echoing through them separately. So I think when I was thinking about putting this novel together, the reason I wanted to have all these different scraps and moments, different kinds of things, little jokes and little, sometimes there's little devices like questions or surveys, is that at the beginning of the novel, Lizzie, she's very enmeshed with her family and to some extent with the people that come in to the library. In fact, she has a hard time kind of not feeling, and this comes from myself, I'm a very porous person. One of the things that I noticed when I left New York City is that I hadn't realized quite how much it took to be on a subway car, because every bit of what people were feeling would sometimes feel, especially if I was depressed, like it was coming directly into me. And I would find myself like moved to tears by a harsh word or by just the sight of someone with their eyes kind of hollowed out in that way people look when they're in great despair. And I also wanted those flickers kind of feeling. As Lizzie learns more, especially from Sylvia, it starts to be an interspecies flicker. She starts to notice there's a moment where she's letting a fly out the window, and she just notices how it flies in circles before it goes. And she wonders if is that joy? Is that something like joy? And it's a very scary thing, I think, if you're already extended in a lot of directions, to think, do I need to extend it also to the non-human? But that was part of the question of the book for me.
I want to end by asking you to choose at random another hint.
Okay. Tip number 4, give presents. There was no water, no gas, no heat, no electricity, no glass in the windows. But we were very sociable and friendly at that time. We looked after each other. One time, a neighbor made me a little pie for my birthday, not baked, and gave it to me wrapped up with a string. Alma Alec, Bosnian War survivor. The string just really got to me in that little detail. I was reading a lot about people who've just lived in very dark moments of time. And what does it mean in those moments to, I mean, there's been amazing books written about it, like by like man's search for meaning or something, but what does it mean to still try to find something that is about looking outward to others, even in those moments? I was just so struck by when the refugees were coming to the islands in Greece, and there's such a strong idea in Greece of what it means to hospitality, that it's a sacred thing. It might be a god that is there in rags at your door. And that's, I think, an idea, too, that I just keep coming back to. So,
well, I am living in a neighborhood where there are a lot of homeless people. And I know that when I was growing up and reading, say, The Grapes of Wrath, people put pies on their windowsills for the homeless in exchange for whatever, mowing the lawn, plucking the flowers, and that we need to, you know, in my neighborhood at the park, there's a pool. The pool has a locker room and showers. We arranged with the managers of the park that during certain hours, our homeless, who are our homeless, get to go and take a shower. And we've bought towels and soap because we are responsible. They aren't homeless out of choice. They're homeless because circumstances, the weather, has changed on them. And that, ultimately, is what this book by my guest, Jenny Offal, is about. This novel, Weather, which is published by Knopf and is a beautiful novel. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all the other podcast services. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Sean Sullivan. It's his birthday today. Probably when this will air, his birthday will have been several weeks ago. But happy birthday to Sean. I'm very grateful to him. Associate producer Alan Howard, J.C. Swadek, who's back today. She used to be our regular engineer. The technical engineer, Mario Diaz, will be editing the show but is not recording it. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Stephen Wright is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.